So if you know anything about me in real life, you know I'm a pretentious little asshole and I'm really into niche shit. And that's what we're talking about today. Welcome to What Makes a Cult Classic?
Let's go!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Plumber Bummer, your favorite podcast where we watch Super Mario Bros. 1993 once a week, every week, until the release of the 2022 animated Mario movie starring Chris Pratt. I'm your host, my name is Natalie McKnight, and this week we're going to talk about whether Super Mario Bros. Is a cult classic and what makes it a cult classic. But first, I want to really quick talk about some movie news that just came out. As you know, I have to come up with content to fill 60 weeks of this podcast. And that means that we're going to be branching out a little bit. You know, I think Super Mario Bros. Lends itself to a lot of different genres. So this is a podcast primarily about that. But maybe it's also a little bit about video games. And maybe it's also a little bit about movies, and maybe it's also a little bit about dinosaurs. I don't know. We'll find out. What can't I do? So I wanted to talk about the new trailer for the Uncharted movie starring Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. Just came out this week. The movie's currently scheduled for release in February of 2022, which means I will probably be watching it and covering it. I'm pretty excited about it. I personally have not played many Uncharted games. You have to understand, I grew up with the dinkiest little PS2, and then eventually we got a Wii, and then years later I bought myself a Switch. And those are the only gaming consoles that I had growing up. So, unless it came out on one of those, I didn't play it. Which means that, unfortunately, I've not played a lot of the big AAA games that came out on the PlayStation or on the Xbox or on PC, because we had a tiny little laptop that would barely run Google Chrome. So a lot of my knowledge of the Uncharted series has come from watching other people play it or just kind of general cultural osmosis. I would love to play one. We'll see if that happens. But regardless, I am excited for this movie. I'm a big Tom Holland fan. I just think he's neat. I know a lot of people are very into him. I like him the normal amount. I think he's a cool guy. I think he's a good actor. I like the stuff he's in. Pretty much ends there, but Tom, got nothing against you. And he's playing Nathan Drake, so I'm very excited to see what he does with that. It is directed by the guy who did Zombieland. And that's the other thing you gotta know about me. I love zombie media. I think maybe I mentioned this when I talked about the new Resident Evil movie coming out. I don't know what it is. It is comfort food to me. I just love them. I love zombies. I love zombie movies. And I love Zombieland. It's a really funny little kind of pastiche of zombie movies. Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's very steeped in the zombie media boom of the 2000s, early 2010s. But it's good and it's funny. And the director, Ruben Fleischer, is directing Uncharted. So I'm hoping it kind of takes a lighter tone. But it'll be interesting to see what he does with that. I will say a lot of the Uncharted series has felt like it would fare really well as a movie. A lot of it feels really cinematic. There are a lot of big set pieces and action scenes that sometimes don't feel like a video game. They just feel like an interactive movie. So I'm pretty excited to watch this, and I'm excited to cover it for this show, which at this point will do a little bit of everything, and I'm not mad about it. I also want to mention really quickly, I have been playing quite a bit of Deltarune because Chapter 2 just came out a couple weeks ago now, but I just got the opportunity to play it when I was home with my Switch. It's fantastic. I love Toby Fox. I love the stuff he makes. If you have not played Undertale or Deltarune, go do that. You don't have to play Undertale to play Deltarune. They are two completely different stories. They do share characters, but it's not going to be confusing if you don't know what happens in Undertale. And right now, Deltarune chapters 1 and 2 are completely free. So you can go experience them for free on PC or Switch or whatever floats your fancy. It's really fun and it's super funny. And I just wanted to throw that out there because, again, this podcast is about everything. I'm the god of this world and I'm going to talk about Deltarune if I want to talk about Deltarune. And by God, I do. Thank you, Toby Fox. It's a really funny and heartfelt and amazing little piece of media that I really enjoyed. If you are joining us for the first time this week, hi, how are you? You can't answer that, but I'm super excited to have you with us. You may not have ever seen Super Mario Bros. 1993, and that's fine. You don't have to come in and hang out with us for a little while. If you want a full recap, I recommend going back to listen to the second episode of the show, where I talk about it with notes. The first episode, I talk about it without notes, entirely from memory. And I'm also pretty sick. And it's a lot to listen to. But if you want to listen to what happens in the film, get an idea, get a taste of what we're going to be discussing today, you can go listen to that. Or if you stick around, I'm about to recap the movie as quick as I can right now. We'll see how this goes. It was my third time watching it this week. I forced my dad and my sister to sit down and watch it with me. Reviews were mixed. My dad did not like it. My sister liked it more, but they both thought it was bad, and they're correct. What happens in this movie? Essentially, it follows Mario and Luigi as they travel to an alternate dimension because our universe was split into parallel timelines when the meteor that killed the dinosaurs struck the Earth. So in our timeline, the dinosaurs were killed by the meteor, and in this alternate dimension, they weren't, and they continued to evolve into humanoid beings. Mario and Luigi have to go rescue Princess Daisy, Peach is not in this movie, who has been kidnapped by the evil Koopa, who wants to use her to merge the two dimensions so that he can take resources from our world and take them into his dimension, which is unfortunately pretty low on resources. That's the gist of the movie. There's a character I love very dearly named Lena, and if you've listened to the past couple episodes, you know how much I love Lena. It's unfortunate that she really doesn't do much, but I love her. And that's pretty much the gist of what you need to know for this episode. Maybe I'll get better at recapping that movie. I don't know. Hopefully, if I'm going to watch it 60 times, I will get pretty good at knowing what happens in it. But today, we are going to be discussing whether or not we think it's a cult film, which is a term that's pretty widely recognized, but also you may not have heard before. A cult film is a movie that wasn't very well received at the time of its release, but has since gained a very devoted fan base, which is generally called a cult following. It's not an actual cult. I feel like I should put a disclaimer. No cults here, just people who really like a kind of niche movie that maybe not a lot of people talk about or people generally think is bad, and maybe it is. These movies are generally pretty campy, or they have this like so bad it's good kind of quality to them. They're often considered iconic or important to a niche subculture, and sometimes they have regular midnight showings. So I feel like the prime example, the cult film to crown all other cult films, is The Rocky Horror Picture Show, which came out in 1975, starring Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Bostwick. I love that film. I grew up on its soundtrack. And if you know the soundtrack, I should clarify, just the first half of it, just up to Meatloaf. And then past that, I don't know. I didn't know what happened until I was a teenager. But it's just weird. It's delightfully weird and delightfully campy. Tim Curry kills that role. If you haven't seen it, don't expect it to be good going in, but I recommend watching it. And if you have the ability, please try to go to a showing in a theater or with a group of people. people get really into it. They dress up. There are costumes. They will probably, I think most theaters at this point, hand you a bag of props at the door with maybe a little instruction card to tell you what to do with them. Because there's a part where you throw cards into the air, and there's a part where you throw toilet paper, and there's a part where you put a newspaper over your head. And if this sounds insane, I promise it starts making more sense in the context of the movie. But basically, all of this developed because people started to go see Rocky Horror once a week, every week. It was huge with the queer community. People would dress up as the characters. People would go. Eventually, people started yelling things back at the screen, and they started bringing props. So there's a line where one of the characters says, "Great Scott," which is when you throw the toilet paper. Do you get it? All right. But it's a really fun interactive experience with a really vibrant community. A lot of college campuses and cities, especially major cities, do shadow casts where they will have a group of performers do the songs and the lines along with the actors while the movie is playing. Those are really fun to go to. If you somehow escaped Rocky Horror cultdom, I recommend trying to get into it. It's super fun. But that's kind of, I guess, the epitome of this cult film experience, is this really dedicated community that just loves the film and likes discussing it and likes bonding with people over it. Other films that have gotten similar treatments, Heathers, which is a film I love, Jennifer's Body, which is a more recent one, The Big Lebowski, a classic, Troll 2, which I have never seen, but apparently people really love Troll 2. And then very famously, The Room by Tommy Wiseau, which is the best good-bad movie ever. And then in recent years, Super Mario Brothers has kind of been considered a cult classic in this upper echelon. In fact, I didn't know this until I started doing research for this episode, but just before I started this podcast, and right after the 2022 movie cast announcement, right at the end of September of 2021, Super Mario Brothers topped Amazon Video sales, beating out the new Fast and Furious movie. Which is bonkers that this terrible film from 1993 beat out this major blockbuster. It isn't streaming anywhere, so it would make sense that after this cast list came out, people kind of flocked to these Amazon Video sales. But because it isn't streaming anywhere, if you want to watch this movie, you really have to want to watch it. You have to pay money to watch this movie specifically, which I have done because I'm going to watch it 60 times. But most people, I would say, are not in that same boat. And it's wild to me that so many people wanted to watch Super Mario Brothers after this cast announcement that it topped Amazon Video sales. That's bonkers. That's insane. Anyway, do I start a petition to get Super Mario Brothers streaming? Maybe. Hey, Netflix. Hey, HBO Max. Hey, Amazon Prime. If you want to put Super Mario Brothers on your list, I'm not mad about it. I don't know who the people would be that you have to talk to. I'll be there. Put me on that Zoom call, babe. I'll be there. Let's start a change.org petition. Or, I was going to say a GoFundMe, but we don't need money for this. Start a GoFundMe so we can pay whoever owns the distribution rights to Super Mario Brothers 1993 and put it on Netflix or something. I think it deserves to be there. But of course, this begs the question that if so many people have flocked to Amazon to buy this film in order to watch it, it then follows enough people like it, or at least are interested in it enough to pay money specifically to watch it. My question is, why do people like it? Why do people want to watch this movie? I want to because I think it'd be funny. I did this all for the bit. However, again, most people don't have a podcast where they're gonna watch it every week and make jokes about it and talk about it. So why else would people want to see this movie? Well, I have a couple theories. The first is that there are several movies that came out in the 20th century that Super Mario Brothers directly ripped from. And I mean, like, straight took from. I've talked about a couple of these. One of them is The Wizard of Oz, which is perhaps the most iconic movie in the American film library. I would say so. It's a lot of people's favorites. If somehow you've avoided it, you know what? We have a couple international listeners. Hi, guys. If you're listening someplace that is not the United States of America, first of all, can I just say I really appreciate you genuinely tuning into my little show. But anyways, if you're an international listener and you have not seen The Wizard of Oz and you want just a taste of the American cinema experience, I highly recommend it. It has been incredibly influential to a lot of filmmakers, including, apparently, the filmmakers of Super Mario Brothers. As I mentioned in my quick little recap, it's about these two brothers who hop dimensions, which is very similar to the plot of Wizard of Oz, in which Dorothy Gale is transported by a tornado into the magical land of Oz. I would say SMB has, that's what we call it here, by the way, SMB, we're at that point. I would say it has a darker tone than The Wizard of Oz. But also, Dorothy kills someone immediately. So maybe they're about equal. Also, if you've read the books, especially the first Wizard of Oz book, way different, way more detailed, clearly a political allegory. I really recommend it if you're into that kind of stuff. Still a children's book, but the tone is a bit darker. There's a lot more going on. I recommend it. There are a couple lines in SMB, which I mentioned last week, that feel directly ripped from The Wizard of Oz. There's one where Luigi's like, hey, I don't think we in Brooklyn anymore. That was my Brooklyn accent. Thanks for listening. And if you've seen The Wizard of Oz, you will, of course, know the very famous, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. That's my Judy Garland. I'm an impressionist. I don't know what to say. So clearly there are a lot of similarities there. Another such movie is Back to the Future, which I've mentioned the ending of Super Mario Brothers, where Daisy comes back to their dimension to get them for another adventure. Literally directly ripped from the end of the first Back to the Future movie. It's also similar because Alan Silvestri did the music for Super Mario Brothers. He also did the music for Back to the Future. He's a great composer. I actually really like the music in SMB, but definitely similar. The other movie that SMB seems to be very similar to is Ghostbusters. There's the scene at the end of the movie where they de-evolve Koopa, because that's a thing they can do if you've missed the other episodes. De-evolution is a huge plot point. But they take their Devo guns and they de-evolve him back into a Tyrannosaurus Rex from whence he evolved. But it's very similar to the end of Ghostbusters. If you've seen Ghostbusters, you would know they take their plasma guns? Question mark? I don't want Ghostbusters fans to get on my ass. Their plasma... Wait. That's a video game. What? My bad. It's called a proton pack. They take their proton pack. And then they, you know, shoot them. I haven't seen Ghostbusters in a couple of years. Anyways, I'm saying it's a very similar scene with the beams and they're shooting the bad guy. You get it. All right. The tone of the movies is also very similar. Ghostbusters has that weird kind of dark comedic tone that I think Super Mario Brothers was aiming for. Whether they got there is up for you to decide, but it feels like it was very directly inspired by Ghostbusters. I'm also going to mention Shrek, which I'm aware came out after this movie. Shrek came out in 2001. Good for him. SMB came out in 1993, but I'm including it because it's very much within that same genre of taking these kind of fairy tale elements, such as a kidnapped princess, and satirizing them or poking fun at them or kind of subverting them. They feel like they were cut from the same cloth. And I don't know if the people who made Shrek would be happy with me saying that, but I think the people who made Super Mario Brothers would. I'm mentioning all of these movies because I feel like they all serve the same purpose, which is that Super Mario Brothers plays big on nostalgia. And that's both nostalgia from the original Mario games, but also from these movies, which you may have grown up with or watched at some point. Personally, I grew up with all of them. I watched Shrek maybe every week. And its inclusion is important for me because it did color how I viewed SMB. Even though it came out later, for me, I watched it first. And as I mentioned, they're very similar. Even when I was watching SMB for the first time, there was something really familiar about its art direction and its humor and its tone that I couldn't quite put my finger on. At one point, I said it was like a fever dream, which was true. It felt very much like I had fallen asleep as a child and had this terrible nightmare, but that was very nostalgic for me because that happened to me a lot as a kid. So I really drew on that experience. I will say many cult films kind of feel like fever dreams. Rocky Horror is another one that if you fell asleep during Rocky Horror and then you woke up later in the film, you could probably just dream the events that happened in the middle. It feels like you'd be able to do that. Apparently, fever dream is a big market for cult films. So if you are a filmmaker looking to make a movie that would last in the public consciousness, fever dream it up, babe. Just get some weird shit in there. It's a big market. Shigeru Miyamoto is a name that you may have heard, especially if you're a huge Mario fan. He's the creator of the Mario games. He also created Legend of Zelda and Pikmin and Star Fox. He's done a ton with Nintendo. He's been very influential, and he's had a couple things to say about this Super Mario Brothers movie. In 2007, after the release of Super Mario Galaxy, he did an interview with The Edge, in which they asked him about this movie, and here's what he had to say about it. Well, when we first initiated talks about a Super Mario Bros. Movie, I tried to emphasize the point that the Mario Bros. Games are fun as video games, and if we were going to make a Mario Bros. Movie, that movie should be entertaining as a movie, and not a translation of the video game. I think that they tried very hard, and in the end, it was a very fun project that they put a lot of effort into. The one thing that I still have some regrets about is that the movie may have tried to get a little too close to what the Mario Bros. Video games were, and in that sense, it became a movie that was about a video game, rather than being an entertaining movie in and of itself. Now, you gotta understand, I have so much respect for Miyamoto and the work that he's done. He's a very creative man. He shaped my childhood. I owe a lot to him. I just also think he's wrong. He's just wrong. I think SMB sits in this perfect little niche of being just enough like the Mario games to capitalize on that nostalgia from them. But it's also unique enough to be its own independent movie. Honestly, the only real similarities that it shares with the Mario Brothers games are Italian plumber brothers with red and green color palettes. And even that, it fucks up a little bit. They don't wear red and green until an hour and 6 minutes into the movie. I don't think Mario Brothers is a bad movie because it was too close to the Mario games. If anything, it feels like it was too far away from the central concept. So every time it kept trying to refer back, it was like, whoa, that guy's name is Toad. Why are they called Goombas? That's not what this movie is. I think it was this weird kind of paradox of both being really far away and distant from the Mario Bros. Concept, while also kind of trying too hard to attach itself to it. Which means that it landed in this, again, very strange niche middle zone where you get that nostalgia of like, oh, I grew up on these games. And especially if you grew up in the 90s, there's a lot of nostalgia there because it does reference contemporary things in the 90s. Obviously, a lot of the technology they use, especially in the human world in Brooklyn, very close. There's that weird 90s toy that Luigi puts over his face at one point. And so it taps into that kind of early 90s nostalgia that if you were a kid then, very much reminds you of your childhood. So it's, I think it has its thumb in quite a few nostalgia pies, as it were. A huge factor for cult movies is the ability to be iconic. And this is an audio format, so you can't see me put that in air quotes, but I hope you could hear it in my voice. Iconic. And the reason I put it in air quotes is that it is so tossed around and applied to different things and in different ways that it's really hard to pin down a definitive idea of what being iconic is. But I think that a general working definition is recognizable. If you look at Rocky Horror, so many of the elements and the costumes aren't like anything you've ever seen before. Truly nothing is like Rocky Horror, and it's recognizable because of that. Like, when Tim Curry struts in heavy makeup and a corset, you're like, oh shit, this could only be Rocky Horror. Riff Raff's whole look, Magenta's whole look, Columbia's look, iconic. Eddie riding a motorcycle out of a freezer barely makes sense, but you know what it is. Nothing else has ever done anything like that before. And I think that's a huge part of what makes something iconic is, you know, it can be similar to something, but it's distinct enough on its own. All the heathers being color-coded in heathers, iconic. The scene in Jennifer's Body where she's wearing that prom dress in the pool, and her hair is wet and slicked down and she has blood dripping from her mouth, iconic. The scene in The Big Lebowski where he's like, that's just like your opinion, man. Iconic. And for SMB, this muddled tone of dark and comedic and for kids and for adults isn't good, but it's so distinct to it that it's absolutely recognizable. And dare I say it, iconic. And here's the thing. I've been ragging on this movie for a couple weeks now. It is fun. For all of its faults, it's a really good time. It's a wild ride. Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo genuinely have really fun chemistry. Watching them interact is a highlight of the movie. Their dialogue, writing-wise, pretty shit. But the way they deliver it is really believable. You can see that, you know, they care for each other. They grew up together. Luigi clearly looks up to Mario, and Mario clearly cares for Luigi. They have some really good banter and back and forth moments. And most of the performances are at least interesting, even if the writing doesn't support their performance. I've mentioned before that the visual effects were almost nominated for an Oscar. And while they aren't great by 2021 standards, they're pretty good for the time. And even when they're not, they're really fun to laugh at. It's just a good time. The only kind of movie that I can't stand is a boring one. And Super Mario Brothers definitely is not boring. It's hard to really say why it's a cult classic or what makes it one. But I do know that when I came up with the idea for Plumber Bummer, watching this movie every week just kind of felt right. It felt like it was designed for this kind of thing, even if that was unintentional. And I think that's what really makes a cult classic, is something that people can watch and rewatch and discuss and bond over. And that's what Super Mario Brothers allows you to do. And that's what I want to do with this podcast. And that got a little too sappy, so we're going to pivot. If you've listened to the past couple episodes, you know every week I give you a non-Mario movie rec so that you can know and judge my taste in films that aren't Super Mario Brothers 1993. This week I wanted to go with something that was still pretty campy, still kind of a cult classic, and I had to do Clue the movie from 1985. We're continuing with this kind of Halloween-esque theme. It's about murder. I feel like that's close enough. I'm a huge fan of Clue the board game. I have not lost a game of Clue in quite some time. So I would say I know a thing or two about it. And this movie is just so delightful. It's so campy. It's so like bonkers and off the wall. All of the lines are played so straight, which is what makes it so funny. Tim Curry stars as Wadsworth the butler. And all right, listen, I've talked about Tim Curry earlier this episode when I talked about Rocky Horror. Halloween is Tim Curry's holiday. He played Pennywise in It. He played Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror Picture Show. He played Wadsworth in Clue the Movie. And if you have not seen Anything Can Happen on Halloween, oh boy, do I have a treat for you. Anything Can Happen on Halloween is from a television film called The Worst Witch, which is based on a children's book of the same name. It came out in 1986. It is a musical fantasy television film. And Tim Curry plays the Grand Wizard. I have never seen this full movie. However, it is a Halloween tradition for me to go watch Anything Can Happen on Halloween. It is entirely sung by Tim Curry. It has incredibly 1986 special effects. The lyrics are bonkers. It's like, anything can happen on Halloween. Your dog could turn into a cat. Your sister could turn into a bat. It's a lot of things turning into other things. But it's just a delight. If you have not seen it, I really recommend looking it up. I'll post a link of it to the show's Twitter, @BummerPod, always be plugging, so you can go look for it there. But it's fantastic. Anyways, it's Tim Curry's month. October is Tim Curry time. And that's why you should absolutely go watch Clue the Movie. It also stars Christopher Lloyd, Martin Mull, Leslie Ann Warren, Michael McKean, Eileen Brennan, and of course, the late, great Madeline Kahn. It's just wonderful. It also, it's insane. It has three different endings because they wanted to make it like Clue the board game, where the ending changes every time. So they made three different endings for this movie and aired them across theaters with the different endings. So if you went to go see this movie in 1985 when it came out, you saw one of three selected endings for that theater. I grew up with the DVD release, so it had all three of the endings on there. One of them is better than the others. I won't spoil anything. I don't want to spoil anything for you. We don't know who done it. I will say the movie has a flaw in that because it has multiple endings, they don't do a great job of foreshadowing who the real killer is, because they can't, because it changes every time. But it's still a fantastic movie. It's just a fun little romp. And if you like cult films and you like campy films, you would love this movie. I can't recommend it enough. It's one of my favorite films. That's going to do it for us this week. Hey, thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, you can follow us for updates on Twitter, @BummerPod. You can also write to us at PlumberBummerPodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show and you want a way to support us, you can find us on Ko-Fi at ko-fi.com/plumberbummer. That's ko-fi.com/plumberbummer, or at the bottom of the show notes. If you like the show and you have someone that you think would like it as well, please tell them about it. We don't pay for advertising. We rely entirely on word of mouth in order to get our show's name out there. So please, tell your friends about it. Tell your grandma. Maybe your grandma's really into cult films and she would love this episode. Let her know. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, which pleases the almighty algorithm and allows us to spread our seed further into the land through his grace. Bless you, algorithm. I don't know why I went British for that bit, but I'm committing to it. Thank you so much for listening to the show. It really means a lot to us. And as Mario would say, wahoo!
Let's go!